They're the up-and-comers, so we're discussing career paths for emerging healthcare leaders. Our guest is Andy Hillig. He's Managing Director, specializing in leadership and coaching at LAK Group, and also a fellow of the American College of Healthcare Executives. This Healthcare Executive Podcast, providing you with insightful commentary and developments in the world of healthcare leadership. To learn more, please visit ache.org. And a reminder, you don't need more tools, you need results. MedMetrics helps health systems deliver solutions that turn revenue cycle management into predictable yield end-to-end or where you need it most. Find out how at MedMetrics.com. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Joey Waller. Hi there, Andy. Welcome.
Hi, Joey. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So this is an interesting topic. First, can you share a little bit in a nutshell about your career journey in healthcare leadership? What do people need to know?
Well, I think the interesting thing about my career in healthcare leadership is like a book that comes out with new editions every so often. I'm probably on edition 3.0, I would call it right now in my career. I began my career in the laboratory as a medical technologist. That's what I have an undergrad degree in. But early in my career, I was asked to be part of a special project that was being tasked with enhancing workflow efficiency, quality outcomes, reliability of the lab services. Because of the success of that project, the organization created a permanent role for me, and my work expanded into a system-wide process improvement function to support the broader organizational performance and operational excellence initiatives. I advanced through that into leadership roles, continuing to guide process improvement and enterprise transformation. At the executive level, I was asked to lead the design and execution of system-wide transformation strategies, grounded in things like lean management, and where I was also improving efficiency, quality, and cross-functional alignment. So that was kind of the 2.0 version. The 3.0 is I took that experience and I've pivoted my career now to focus on leadership effectiveness and human performance, really recognizing that critical role that leadership and leadership behavior plays in sustaining operational excellence in an organization. So now I oversee a consulting practice with LAK Group as an executive coach and leadership development. I support leaders and organizations in strengthening their capabilities, navigating the complexity of today's world and leading more effectively.
Gotcha. So you not only teach leadership, you've been a leader yourself. With that subject, what would you say first drew you to leadership development, working with early careerists and emerging leaders? Why that?
Yeah, well, you know, when I moved into process improvement, I gained a real appreciation for the interconnectedness of people and process, and really that study of why processes break down. And when that work expanded into the system role, my work shifted from improving a single department to really influencing how the entire healthcare system operates and functions. And as I began to lead larger scale transformation efforts, and my work shifted to more of the culture of the organization, my beliefs began to strongly align with those of what I mentioned before, the lean management philosophies that were really made famous by the Toyota production system. Those philosophies are that technical solutions and process improvement only go so far without the leadership behavior to sustain them. And so over time, I realized that the biggest constraint to lasting improvement wasn't the lack of knowledge on the tools or the framework. It was how leaders showed up for their teams in these really complex, sticky, ambiguous changes that were going on. So with that insight, I really began to focus on leadership development along with system design. Because what I really believed and still believe is that leadership behavior is the biggest determinant of whether improvements actually stick.
All right. Interesting. So as an executive coach, we hear the term all the time. In your case, what do you do?
What I do as an executive coach is work with individuals, leaders, one-on-one. Oftentimes, it's less about teaching them new things, but more about bringing forward insight and awareness to what they already have. And I'll say giving them the space to build more confidence around what they already know, how they lead, really, again, focusing on those experiences. How am I going to show up for my team? How am I going to make confident decisions? How am I going to handle some of the hard parts of leadership, which is, you know, sometimes making the right decision versus the easy decision, having difficult conversations with people and teams, et cetera. So I really, from the coaching standpoint, work with individuals to reinforce what they know is the right things to do with leadership. With leadership development, that's more of the training on those skills and abilities that leaders need to have. Call it those soft skills that we hear so much about. Helping them develop and put those skills and abilities into action in terms of how they lead every day.
So when you look at healthcare today, what trends shape the experience of early career professionals most, would you say? And what do emerging leaders need to do to stay adaptable these days, of course?
Yeah, well, you know, the big elephant in the room, the biggest trend these days is it goes for healthcare, but it really goes across the workforce landscape, which is AI and digital transformation, not just as a technology shift, but really as a workforce shift. Early career professionals are entering healthcare at a time when the way we work, the way we communicate, and how we make decisions is rapidly evolving. As we know, AI is going to automate certain tasks. But I think the other interesting part about it is that it's actually going to increase the value of uniquely human skills, things like empathy, communication, collaboration, just to name a few. So the professionals who are going to stand out are going to be the ones who combine that digital fluency with strong interpersonal leadership skills. So I think that's one. I think another major shift is that adaptability is becoming more important than the credentialed expertise alone, right? Healthcare is changing so quickly, new technologies, workforce pressures, changing patient expectations that leaders have to continuously learn and evolve. So their ability to learn, frankly, unlearn or relearn also are becoming core leadership competencies. And then I think, you know, to bring those two together, I think, you know, AI and that adaptability is going to reshape career paths in healthcare leadership. I think traditional roles are going to evolve significantly. Some may disappear over time. At the other end, I think new roles are going to entirely emerge as well, too, things that aren't even defined yet. So because of that, as an emerging leader, what I'd be really excited about is the idea of being much more intentional about career planning instead of focusing on climbing the traditional ladder. The focus is really shifting to how do you build skills and seeking diverse experiences and staying open to opportunities that may not exist today. And I think I'm one example, not technology related, but as I go back on my history of my career with process improvement, that was a role that didn't exist in my organization. So being open and seeking some diverse experiences brought me to where I am today.
And so speaking of where up and coming leaders fit into all this, naturally it helps when healthcare organizations have candidates that can articulate their particular interests and goals. But how can early careerists do that if they're unsure about exactly what they want to do in the future ahead? What's your advice there?
Well, given everything that I just said about kind of the uncertainty of the future, I think first it's important to normalize that many early careerists don't fully know what they want to do yet. And quite frankly, I don't think they need to have it all figured out. quite honestly, I'm kind of disappointed that our society today puts so much pressure on our young people to have life all figured out at a very young age. I have a college-aged son who, and I see him and all of his friends, and the pressure that they're put under to have it all figured out at such a young age. And I think that's putting too much pressure on our future talent. As you heard before, I'm light years away from what I have an undergrad degree in and would have never imagined I'd be doing the work I'm doing today. So I think that's first and foremost to normalize that I don't know that we have to have it all figured out. I also think, though, sometimes we define our goals too narrowly as professionals. Goals don't have to mean having a specific title or a 20-year career plan. I think what is more important is to answer the question, what kind of work energizes me and what kind of impact do I want to have in my career? One of the best questions I ever heard somebody say was, if you got to your retirement dinner and people were giving speeches about you, what would you want them to say about your legacy of your career? What impact did you have? That's really what should guide the career discussions and career direction. One of the best ways I think emerging leaders can get that clarity is through a lot of self-reflection, looking at current and past experiences and asking themselves, what part of that work gave me energy? What kinds of problems did I enjoy solving? Do I enjoy solving now? When do I feel most engaged or fulfilled? And what environments do I work best in? So there's also a lot of great tools that can help build some of that self-awareness, things like leadership strength assessments, personality assessments, even career coaching conversations with a professional career coach. So I think sometimes people discover patterns about themselves that they haven't fully recognized before through some of those great tools and resources. So my best advice to early professionals is to pay closer attention to what naturally interests them on a day-to-day basis, rather than pointing their sights at, like I said, a title or an exact, you know, defined career plan.
Certainly makes sense. So as you all know, candidates for leadership positions are usually expected to have a certain level of executive presence, if you will. So what does that mean to you for an emerging healthcare leader? How do you acquire that? If you can acquire that, or are you born with it? Where does it come from?
I don't think anybody's born with it. I think it can always be developed, first of all, just my opinion. One of the things that I've been writing and speaking a lot about recently is that many of traditional leadership beliefs we've inherited, especially in healthcare. And I think those beliefs are starting to break down. And I actually think that that's good news for emerging leaders. For a long time, leadership was often modeled around the idea that leaders had to carry everything themselves, carry the pressure, carry the responsibility, carry the answers, especially in healthcare. Many leaders built credibility by being the person who could solve problems independently, push through those challenges no matter what. But the reality is that healthcare has become far too complex for any one of us to carry all of the weight and operate that way anymore. So one of the myths I talk about a lot in our workshops and our speaking engagements is the idea that strong leaders aren't supposed to have all the answers. I think emerging leaders are entering the workforce again at a really important time because these leaders who will be most effective going forward aren't necessarily the smartest person in the room. They're the ones who can create environments where teams can think, adapt, and solve problems. So the biggest shift happening from leadership being, you know, the carrying to the leader who is caring. And by caring, I don't mean lowering standards or avoiding accountability. I mean creating that psychological safety, listening, developing people, recognizing that sustainable performance comes from engaged teams. So that, I think, is what is meant by executive presence and what organizations are looking for today in today's environment. Creating that credibility comes from empowering others and asking better questions of your team. helping teams build their confidence and capability. That is, to me, executive presence.
And you, of course, have extensive experience supporting early careerists at the local level through your ACHE chapter. So what can senior leaders like you do to help develop the next generation? How do you mentor these up-and-comers?
Yeah, well, I'm so thankful that I've had the opportunity to work with early professionals for many years through our local chapter here in Wisconsin. And one of the clearest lessons I've learned is that development is one of the strongest drivers of retention and engagement. There are many studies to back me up on that. For many emerging leaders, what really matters and what drives retention is whether they feel like the organization is investing in their growth, giving them meaningful opportunities, trusting them with real responsibility. Again, my story is one of those in terms of how I advanced in from the lab to process improvement to coaching and leadership development. So that's why one of the most important things senior leaders can do is intentionally invest in emerging professionals' development, not just through formal programs, but really, I think by involving early careerists in real work experiences outside of the scope of their role that challenges them, helps them build confidence, allows them to grow. 15 years ago, I developed the Wisconsin chapter's leadership development program. And it was at the time, and it really still is to this day, a very strong, structured way to build foundational leadership skills. But what's also becoming very clear is that programs like that alone are no longer enough. If you look at the 70-20-10 career or leadership acceleration model, what that says is only about 10% of a leader's development comes from formal training. The real development comes in that 70 and 20% that comes from on-the-job experiences, coaching, mentoring, and reflection. And I think that's where a lot of organizations are falling short these days. People attend workshops, they attend a conference, they get inspired, they learn new tools, but then they go back to the day-to-day and nothing really changes. So that, I think, is where senior leaders and their organizations can make a huge difference. Coaching and mentoring aren't a nice to have. They're what really translate learning into behavior change. And I would say coaching helps close that critical gap and ensures development doesn't stop when the program, the workshop, the seminar ends. It becomes coaching and mentoring really ensures it becomes part of a leader's actual practiced day-to-day. So if I were to summarize all of that, Joey, I would say what senior leaders can do is invest in real development opportunities and then surround those emerging leaders with coaching and mentoring that actually sticks.
Couple of other questions for you. How about the importance of relationship building and networking and healthcare leadership? How can people build those networks that are genuine and form relationships that really last over the years?
Great question. And you know, I'm reminded of the old saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know that gets you ahead. And while that can sound a little cynical, I actually think there's a deeper truth behind that. The reality is that we see at LAK Group, and again, there are plenty of other studies out there that show roughly 70 to 80% of people, so 7 to 8 out of 10 people are going to land a role through their network when they're looking to take that next step or looking for a new career opportunity. And so that's going to come by way of referrals, relationships, internal visibility, someone advocating on their behalf. Very few leadership opportunities are truly coming from that cold application, applying for a job online anymore these days. And that really matters because the rate of success of cold applying for jobs is really low. People are spending a tremendous amount of time submitting applications, working their way through the ATS systems, those online application systems, trying to match the algorithms, massage their resume, hours. And so the question really has to become what truly moves a career forward. And it comes back to those relationships that are built through networking. Healthcare is a very, you know, trust-based, human-centered system. So people want to know, can they trust you? Have I seen you in action? Do I know how you show up under pressure? And that's where networking really becomes less about collecting contacts, so to say, and more about building real professional relationships. I think it also goes back to that that 70-20-10 model that I described a minute ago. Again, we focus heavily on the 10%, but really it's that 20%, those relationships, coaching, mentoring, on-the-job exposure, the 70%, that is going to move a career forward. So that networking is really that vehicle which early careers and emerging leaders become visible. So I would say to any emerging leader, don't think of networking as transactional. Think of it as part of your development. It's how you're going to learn, how you're going to grow, how you develop that credibility, and ultimately how opportunities are going to find you instead of you finding your next opportunity.
Great advice indeed. Absolutely. And in summary here, Andy, we ask this really of all our guests who are fellows of ACHE, like yourself, as we mentioned earlier. How has that FACHE credential helped to advance your healthcare leadership career?
And it seems odd now, right, that I'm in coaching and leadership and not in direct day-to-day healthcare leadership myself, that I have and I maintain that FACHE credential. And it's because it's very important to me to maintain and have that credential simply out of respect for how hard it was to earn it. It really represents a significant commitment to the field and ongoing professional development. But just as importantly, it continues to connect me to a community and a standard of excellence in healthcare leadership that I deeply value. So one of the biggest benefits of the FACHE credential, again, goes back to that credibility. In healthcare, it signals a shared language, a shared commitment to leadership standards and ethics and professional growth, more importantly. It tells others that you've invested in your development and that you're serious about leading at a higher level. It also expands your network in a meaningful way, right? The relationships I've built through ACHE and my FACHE credential, both locally and nationally, have been some of the most enduring and valuable professional connections in my career. Another important benefit is the discipline of continued learning and reflection. Maintaining the credential requires ongoing engagement, which reinforces the idea that leadership's not a destination, it's a continuous ongoing practice. So that mindset also helps keep leaders current and grounded and connected to the broader trends in healthcare. And then finally, I think the FACHE credential reinforces something really important about a leader's identity. It reminds me, it reminds leaders that I'm part of a broader profession, not just an organization. And that's important perspective, especially in healthcare, where leadership challenges are often systemic, and they don't exist only in our organization. They exist across the industry. So it helps leaders zoom out, think beyond their own walls, and stay connected to the bigger mission of healthcare improvement.
Well, your commitment to everything you're doing certainly shines through in this conversation. Folks, we trust you're now more familiar with career paths for emerging healthcare leaders. Andy, keep up all your great work. Thanks so much again.
Thanks for having me, Joey.
Absolutely. And for more information, please do visit healthcareexecutive.org. If you found this podcast helpful, please do share it on your social media. And thanks so much again for being part of the Healthcare Executive podcast from the American College of Healthcare Executives.